Hello and welcome to the podcast from EGS Accounting. This time we've got a couple of things to talk about. It's PPI reclaims. I know we thought they were gone, but there's just a little bit of news there that might be useful to you. Habits, something I talked about on a previous podcast. I was talking about how habits might be a useful thing to talk about, and we're going to get into a little bit of that today, and also a little bit of lessons learned from me about sales and cold calling, which is perhaps a necessary evil for many small businesses today. So let's get started. PPI, we thought that was all over. Well, yeah, kinda, but there was one thing that was brought to my attention by the fantastic people over at Money Savings Expert. If you don't subscribe to that, it's a pretty handy newsletter they do each week, which just includes a whole bunch of tips on saving money. This last one that I received told me a little bit about something that wasn't perhaps very well known about PPI repayments you may have previously received. They are by and large calculated net of tax. I didn't know that. I just got an amount. My wife just got an amount from various PPI claims that we made, and we didn't realise that it was there was any breakdown, that there was any tax deducted. If you are in a position where one of you who received a PPI payment was not a basic rate taxpayer, in particular, if you weren't getting any tax, paying any tax at all, which might be the case if husband works and wife is at home, or wife works and husband is at home, if the person who doesn't use all of their tax-free allowance received a PPI payment, it was net of tax automatically, which means that you may be able to reclaim that back from HMRC. I'll link to the details on how you might be able to do that. That's Money Saving Expert. They've got a great how-to on this kind of thing. Just go straight to them. I'll put a link in the description or in the show notes, but you can Google Money Saving Expert PPI tax reclaim. You'll find it. Yeah, so not a big news item this week, but a useful one nonetheless. So one thing I wanted to talk about from a previous podcast was habits. I read this book some time ago, The Power of Habit, or Why We Do What We Do and How to Change. This was a fantastic book for me. I had not really got into any interesting stuff to do with habits before then. I had read some fantastic books about thinking fast and slow, the idea of system one, system two thinking. If you've not heard of that, Google it. It's fantastic. It helps break down the idea of how you respond to things. It's not always rational. In fact, it is very, 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 very likely to be rational second, based on something emotional first, which of course is far more well known now that that very famous book from their work came out. But habits wasn't necessarily something I'd looked into in any depth, but for a long time I've understood from an interest in that kind of psychological stuff that they dominate what we do each day, our unthinking habits. In fact, previously I used to have a massive interest in hypnosis, and hypnosis, there's one particular style of induction into hypnosis which takes advantage of the fact that if you break a habit in the middle, your brain is a little bit unsure what to do next. You could try this with a social experiment by interrupting a handshake by doing something weird and seeing how people sort of get stuck there with their hand out, not sure how to react, but maybe you'll get some funny looks if you do it. But try stopping tying your shoelace halfway through, doing something else without moving, and then trying to resume it. It's sort of odd. It's like this chunk of behaviour is habitually understood by your brain and doesn't break down into its constituent parts easily. It's just a thing, a pattern that you repeat frequently. So habits are really important. And this was a really interesting book for me because I have a need to build some good habits. I used to be a project manager, and in that world, everything is novel. I mean, there are habits that you have, habits for example, checking your risks log or logging down changes to the plan. There are certainly habits that you grow where you sit at your computer and you do things day by day, but much of the content of what you do is novel. You don't have to redo a piece of a project over and over again. Once it's done, it is delivered, and you move on to the next part of the project, the next needed thing for you to build your overall set of deliverables or whatever outcomes you're trying to
agreement or whatever program or business that you're working within. Project management professionals have a tendency to refer to the rest of the organisation that you're working in, people working in the rest of it, what they do is referred to as BAU, business as usual, and it's almost a derogatory remark, and I don't think it's intended particularly that way, but I think it comes from a place where the people who like working in projects and programmes like novel one-off pieces of work. I like to work on it for a fixed amount of time, to a certain standard, to a certain budget, according to a certain risk, and to a defined set of quality criteria, and then it's there, and it's done, and it's something you can feel proud of, it's polished, it's finished, and you move on to the next thing. The kind of people that like that are not necessarily the kind of people that mesh well with business as usual, which includes yours truly. Now, in our small business, in Aegis Accounting, I have built the product that was the project work of the bean counter, so that you can speak your expenses to your phone, your sales, your mileage, and they just get recorded. And I'm very proud to have done it, but that's a one-off product. In order to work sustainably in the business and keep it growing, I have a role in sales and marketing and doing things like this. Things like this are good. Each individual video is a single project. Each topic is novel. I don't cover the same ground that I've done before, because I would find that boring. I'm sure you would too. So there is a certain projectiness to it, but there's also a set of habits that I need to build to do each week that someone who is more used to working in a company and having the same habitual patterns of behaviour, something that they will find more instinctively able to adapt to than I do. So I have revisited the idea of habits in order to support building out a set of habits that will help actually facilitate the sales and marketing activities that I need to do. I loved this book. It was very informative. It had a huge amount of really useful and insightful stories, things about addiction and how they stem from habits and the reward systems that you might have. It talks about how gamblers who have a habitual problem with gambling might have a different response to near wins, or I suppose near misses, than a non-gambling addict does. I don't have any love of gambling. If I feel like I nearly won, I still feel like I lost. But if someone who feels like they nearly won when they didn't gets a positive response in their brain, then they might get a habit, a reward for their habit, and they might continue it on. It may become an addiction, which might inform policy, and that's a chunk of this book which is really interesting to read. Well, one of the things that was talked about in this book, changing habits is mentioned, but building new ones is maybe not necessarily as well covered as I needed it to be, because there was a little hole that I was left to my own devices to try and figure out how to deal with. I've heard it referred to, I'm not sure if it's in here or if it's other materials that I've seen, I've heard it referred to as a gateway habit. If you're trying to build a new piece of routine into your life for whatever outcome that you want, then you need the gateway habit, the thing that you start and then everything sort of flows along from there. The best way of thinking about that for me is probably health and fitness. I think it's easy for people to relate to too. Everyone has had an experience where they've tried to build health and fitness into their health regime. And it can be tricky to build that habit, especially if you try and do everything at once. One of the things that I think is most useful is identifying what's that one smallest action that you will take that everything will sort of naturally lead from there. I love sleep. In the morning, I am not someone who really wants to wake up and get going at 5:30. I didn't do that. So I quite like to do my exercise first thing in the morning, hopefully without too much interruption from my son, who likes to get up at 6:30, and I can get on with it and I can get it done. And it's the time when I can kick off the habit. With the smallest thing, the smallest action that'll make it actually happen. And the gateway habit that I decided that works for that is really simple. I have my clothes folded up and they're beside the bed already. My workout clothes are there. And the thing that I do is I get up and I get changed. And then I come downstairs and I do my workout and all that. But that's by the by. The gateway habit, the part that makes it all happen, that is simply having my clothes by the bed, and every morning I get up and I put them on. And that's really what it means. It's taken me ages since buying this book to get that sort of that gateway habit concept really understood. But it's that one willpower, like based habit that you have to start, and then becomes habit over time. But that everything else flows from. Well, for me, it's getting changed. It's getting changed. I also have my clothes stacked in the right order for warmth. You know, bed is lovely and warm. I don't really want to get out of it. So I have an alarm set that has increasing order, increasing volume. So it starts really quietly and doesn't wake my wife. And then I switch that off. I then have a Google Assistant routine that triggers, because I can set that up on my Pixel 4. I think you can on other modern Android phones. And then that goes straight into putting a Spotify playlist on. That Spotify playlist is not actually hard, fast exercise music, but music that I more associate with being up late at night, because that's what it feels like in the winter when it's dark and you wake up early in the morning. So I immediately turn off my phone, put on my headphones and let the music to start playing and get dressed. That is the habit, that is the gateway habit, because the rest just sort of happens from there. Once I'm in my workout clothes, well, I'm not going to sit there on the edge of the bed. You know, I come downstairs, I make myself a coffee and I start doing exercise. I have the exercise equipment laid out down in the lounge, all ready to use. But if I don't, and if I forget to prepare that, I'll still be in my fitness clothes and I'll still have come down to make a coffee. I can get that stuff out. It's no big deal. The other habits can, you know, they're not so critical, but that first one, that's the gateway one. That's the one that the one simple, small action from which everything else flows. And I think that's that definition of a gateway habit that I was looking for that I couldn't quite get when I first looked at this. There are not that many, you know, new routines I feel the need to build into my life, but you know, getting some, you know, physically fit exercise going, that was one of them, and the other is something we're about to come on to now, because the last piece I wanted to talk about is sales and cold calling, which is, yeah, it in a small business it's a necessity to talk to strangers who don't know about you and don't know about what you do, about what you can offer, and to see whether they or someone they know might be interested. And one example of that is making cold calls, where obviously you pick up the phone to a total stranger and see whether they'd be interested in what you do. But there's a huge sort of black cloud around the idea of cold calling, because it's constantly done to you and to me in a very pushy and unpleasant way that is frustrating. And so cold calling has that sort of, I don't know, it has that idea around it. I mean, you say the phrase cold call, it gives me the shudders. You know, it might do for you too. It's just not a pleasant thing. But as soon as you think about it in terms of talking to people you don't know about what you do and hoping that they'll be interested and might want to buy from you, well, that is a necessity in small business. You know, you can only grow so greatly from referrals, which I think are far better. If you do grow by referrals, that's brilliant. We have up until this point. It's good. But you do also need to be able to reach people that you don't know. I think there's a big reliance now on marketing taking the place of sales activity, and I don't think that's quite right. And what I mean is, digital marketing, like having a good website, doing things like this, making nice videos, they are an excellent complement to sales activity, but I don't think they replace it. Yes, you can get by without doing sales if your business only wants to grow at a certain rate. But if you want to grow your business faster, talking to strangers is necessary. So yeah. I have been only very recently in the sales and marketing space. I've done my project management work where I was building the product that is the Bean Counter, where you speak your sales expenses and mileage to your phone. I made that, I'm proud of it, and now I'm into the business as usual element of doing sales and marketing. I've got to, you know, record videos that talk about it. I've got to put posts onto social media. That's sort of the marketing aspect. And also I need to talk to new people and find people who might be willing to become our clients. And that's the sales side. Part of that is cold calling. Only part of it, but it features. And getting resources that help with sales is hard, because the moment you put sales or marketing anything into Google, you are now instantly bombarded on every platform by adverts to do with sales and marketing. Those who are experienced in sales and marketing apply their tools into getting their own clients. It's like sales and marketing turning in on itself to sell to its own clients. It's frustrating. Because if you're anything like me, you sort of feel the intended manipulations of every one of these videos that you see. And it's not that nice. I think there's two reasons. I think firstly, there is good advice and bad advice. There are snake oil salesmen who are trying to sell their services as sales gurus or advisors, but it's all snake oil. But mostly, I don't think that's true. Mostly, I think it's people who just don't have maybe a value mismatch. Maybe what you believe you want to be like as you sell and promote your business doesn't match with how they work and how they present themselves. And I certainly have had a lot of that, because I've seen an awful lot of resources that espouse the very pushy mentality. I used to work in the recruitment industry, although I wasn't in the front office, but we used to deal a lot with the front office staff. They're a particularly salesy sort a lot of the time, at least they were in the organisation I used to work in. And they have a certain way. I mean, there's the phrase, they'd sell their own grandmother, right? Like, the, you know, these kinds of people do well in salesy positions. And I just didn't like that very much. It's not very me. And a lot of the advice is geared towards people who are like that, and will have that mentality towards selling and promoting their own business. And maybe that's right for them, but it's not right for me. So I was really pleased to find a good resource. I'm happy to advertise and promote it here, which is another podcast it's the Sales Prospecting School podcast. You can find it on whatever podcast platform you use. I really like them. There's a couple of guys, I think it's a family business, and they, or a family team podcast, and they talk a lot about sales of the traditional sort in a modern environment where you also have things like maybe digital marketing. So digital marketing and old-fashioned cold calling seem to form a massive basis of what they do, which is fantastic, because I think, speaking from maybe my wife's experience as a personal trainer, digital marketing is fine, advertising what you do, putting posts out on social media, it's quite a local business, so maybe you're advertising to a local area, that's all fine, but it's when you get in front of someone and you talk to them that you actually get the opportunity to genuinely relate to them and their needs, and for them to understand that you are someone they can know, like, and trust and want to buy services from. That face-to-face interaction is, that interpersonal relationship is what really drives getting new clients. So I don't think a digital only marketing strategy, or even what you might call direct sales or digital sales strategy, you know, got a website, bring them in, make them buy, I don't think that's the way that you can necessarily grow a services based small business in particular. I like trying to figure out what's the best way of doing proper sales in a more traditional way. And so one of the reasons I really like these guys is because they share a value that I have, that is not to be pushy and to try and make bad business relationships from pushy sales scenarios. I don't really like that idea. I don't want to sell what Aegis does to people who don't need what Aegis does, or don't value it as much as I think it should be valued, because that's not a good business relationship. Most small businesses are only seeking for to get a very small part of a very big pie. So if you can reach enough people without massive amounts of manpower to find those that are your segment within them, then I think that's what you should concentrate on. I don't think you should spend too much time being, you know, super pushy and trying to make everyone your customer. I don't think it's a good way of, I don't think you'll have a happy business. You know, you'll have to spend a lot of time doing things you don't really want to do with people that you don't think are right to be working with anyway. I don't think that's good. So I would much rather have the approach that they espouse in this particular podcast. These guys are really good at that, at, you know, really believing very much in what they do, but also being perfectly happy to accept that some people reject the product, the timing, or the method. They talk about that a couple of times. I really like that framework. Most people will, when you try and talk to them about what you do in any scenario, maybe the product isn't for them. Maybe the timing isn't for them because they've just acquired those services or products elsewhere. Maybe the method isn't right for them because they don't buy from people who call them, or don't trust people that call them and won't want to continue a relationship from there. That's fine. You know, those things, those people exist. They've got a great phrase, which is they want people that sort of put their hands up when you say, I've got ice cream, and they want the people who put their hands up and say, I love ice cream. They're looking for that reaction. I really like that. That's a really good way to phrase it. We've got an exciting product and service that we love, and we want to reach people who think that that's a good fit for them. I don't want to be pushing around people who don't think that and trying to coerce them into becoming clients. It doesn't work, and it would produce a bad relationship if it did. So that's not for me. So I really liked these guys and what we discovered from listening to that podcast. I'm hoping to listen to more of that. I'll put a link in the show notes of the description, wherever it is that you're listening or watching this. I think it's a great resource, especially if you share that value sort of mindset where you don't really want to be the pushy salesman that doesn't take no for an answer. And I think that's really valuable part of advice as to how to build call scripts, the practical tactical advice for how to do that they give, which is, you know, give plenty of space for a rejection and accept that rejection as one of those three, very likely. It's almost never a personal rejection. Feeling that it might be personal rejection leads to this feeling of call reluctance. You don't even want to pick up the phone because you feel you might be rejected. But it's not. It's usually the product, the method, or the timing. You know, people might say price, but usually that's just concealing something else. So, you know, it means that they don't value the product as much as you've set it. So to an extent, they're rejecting the product because it's not valuable enough to them for the price that you've stated that it sells for, if you have a stated price. So that's kind of how that sort of looks. I think that's a good way, a good framework for thinking about cold calling in sales, I think. I also like it because, of course, it means that the call script allows for no, accepts no, and then moves on to the next person who hopefully will be the person who says, I love ice cream, and wants to buy what you do from you. That would be great. I don't want to spend too much time on the people that don't. And I know that there are huge numbers of very successful people who also say similar things about far more complicated services than we provide, saying that, you know, they don't waste their time on someone who isn't buying. And I don't mean that they abandon people who are nice but uncommitted. What they mean is that someone who's giving no signals, move on. Like, move on. So that's how we want to do it. And if you're watching this video because I have called you and you didn't know who we were and you've gone and looked and found this video, then perhaps you'll agree that this is, you know, we're taking a decent approach. We're not trying to push people around doing things that won't be right for them. But the idea of call reluctance that came up was something I wanted to particularly talk about for me. I think historically I've either been in a position where making calls is natural, habitual, or obvious and just a part of the day, doesn't even notice that it's happening. So a long time ago when I was working briefly as a kid in telesales, making calls just happened. Or when I worked briefly in a call centre, you would just get a beep in your ear, and then the call would land and you would immediately start talking to them about what they needed. It wasn't an outbound call centre, it was an inbound one. But the idea that talking to strangers on the phone was just habitual, there's been those times in my life, and there's been times in my life when talking to strangers has not been habitual. And yes, it is notably different, and call reluctance does feature, even though I'm very, very aware of the idea that if you're talking to a stranger and it doesn't vibe, which can happen very easily if you are trying to do cold calling. They don't know who you are and you're just not getting a good vibe for it. It's also the fact that you're talking with no picture. If you have a face-to-face conversation, there's so much non-verbal communication that happens that it's much easier to have those conversations. But yeah, if you get those times when you're sort of not vibing and you start to feel that that's something that like is your own fault, you're doing it wrong, and you take it as like a, yeah, like a, almost a personal slight. Maybe you take rejection personally rather than one of those three other things that we talked about earlier. Then yeah, that can lead to a real feeling of not wanting to pick up the phone, not wanting to make those calls. The idea that call reluctance comes from those, I think, is good, but I can tell you it's incomplete. The reason I can tell you it's incomplete is because I've got some calls to make, and I have been amazed at my brain's natural capacity to place barriers between me and making those calls. And I fully know that although these calls are to strangers and they may well reject the product or the method or the timing, and because I won't be pushy, it's highly unlikely that they're going to reject me as a person. I'm not rude, I'm quite polite. Most people don't respond like that to a polite phone call. If they're not interested, they say so, that's fine. Even though I do not expect personal rejection, I'm amazed at the surreptitious ways your brain will find to put off uncomfortable tasks. Like I said earlier, when in project management, you have to do an awful lot of novel and unusual tasks, but there's a sense of progress and flow towards a defined outcome, and you just sort of do it. It becomes more natural, at least for me, having worked in that environment. But having the habit of calling strangers regularly, for me, that needs one of those gateway habits that we spoke about a little earlier. I need the thing that means that it happens, because if it doesn't, I've already discovered that just getting around to it when, oh, it's calling time, we should make some calls now. Yeah, it doesn't. Something gets in the way. Something stops it from happening. And it's all from in my own head, I think. Don't think they're genuine interruptions, or don't have to be interruptions that prevent me from moving forward, but they seem to. So I'm amazed, even though I know that this is just a, you know, a silly and unnecessary call reluctance, and as soon as I pick up the phone, it's like I'm in that mode where it's perfectly habitual and natural and everything just flows normally. Yeah, call reluctance is a thing, even if you don't believe that you will be personally rejected. So yeah, I'm looking now for the gateway habit for that. So I will let you know how that goes. As I say, if you found this because you have received a cold call from Aegis Accounting and you wondered about us and wanted to discover more, then yes, now you realise it was uncomfortable for me to start talking to strangers. Although, once I get started talking to strangers, it's never uncomfortable. It's just a natural thing to do. The gateway habit for me probably comes from the CRM system that we've put in place and having a call list pop up, and the uncomfortable first part of making the first call. As soon as I get over that, I think we'll be fine. So I'll let you know how that goes. That wraps it up. We've spoken a little bit about PPI and reclaiming the tax that was automatically deducted from a PPI payment made to you if, during that tax year that you received the payment, you were not into basic rate tax. If you were not paying tax that year, you should reclaim that. See your money savings expert for more details. That's really useful stuff. We talked a little bit about habits and how building new habits can be really tricky, and in particular how for me building new habits around making calls is necessary, and how sales and cold calling can be a tricky but important part of your small business. I hope you found that interesting. If you did, you know what to do. Follow, like, subscribe, whatever the thing is, wherever you're listening to this or watching it. I hope to talk to you again in the next one. Bye. Thank you.